This is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. America was purportedly founded on the principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But for some of America's founding fathers, including Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, they were also slave owners. On tomorrow's show, we're going to talk with Kenneth Davis about his new book, In the Shadow of Liberty, The Hidden History of Slavery, Four Presidents, and Five Black Lives. And we want to hear from you. How does the legacy of slavery taint America's history, or does it? Call us at 404-500-9457 to be a part of this discussion, and be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 a.m. for more. Well, as we've heard, Macon launched the careers of celebrated musicians like Greg Allman, Otis Redding, but Macon has also been home to many unsung musical heroes, and one tour company makes every effort to give them their due. Jamie Weatherford and Jessica Walden are a husband and wife team who run Rock Candy Tours in Macon. They offer guided visits of historical music sites in the city. They spoke with Celeste Headlee in February as part of our Year of Georgia Music series. She began by asking Jamie who he considers the most underrated musician in Macon.
One of the ones that first pops in my mind, just in terms of the local scene, or somebody who had such a tremendous impact, would be Johnny Jenkins. Johnny Jenkins and Phil Walden, who is best known as the founder of Capricorn Records, had a career that was intertwined together forever. But Johnny Jenkins also played an instrumental role in launching the career of Otis Redding.
Let's actually hear from Johnny Jenkins. So, Jamie, how did Johnny Jenkins help launch Otis Redding into fame?
Well, when Phil Walden first started what is known as Phil Walden Artist and Promotions in 1958, one of the first bands that he started booking was a band called Johnny Jenkins and the Pine Toppers. And in the background of this band, actually, as a backup singer, was Otis Redding. And it was through this relationship that Phil and Otis created that eventually Otis Redding would actually become a partner with Phil Walden in Phil Walden Artist and Promotions. And to our knowledge, that was the first integrated owned business in the city of Macon. Otis was 17 years old and Phil was 18 years old. And together, they would manage and book the careers of a lot of tremendous R&B artists out of Macon, Georgia, including Sam and Dave, Percy Sledge, Ike and Tina Turner, The Meters, Clarence Carter. They had a tremendous roster of great Southern soul artists. And, of course, Otis Redding himself would become the king of soul by 1967.
Normally, this would be where Jessica, where I'd say there's no relation between Jessica and Phil Walden, but that's not true.
All roads lead back to Macon, and for me, it comes back to a family tree. And my this is where the course of my family's history changed. My uncle, Phil Walden, was my father's older brother, and he fell madly in love with what was called Race Records at the time, and ultimately took the whole family with him into the music industry. And, of course, really shaking things up here in Macon, Georgia.
Did you ever have conversations about what it was he loved so much, what he heard? He seemed to have an incredible ear for talent.
He really did. It's something that I ask myself all the time. He just had this unbridled passion for music. I mean, he was just a fanatic about it. And when you look at how many, he just had that ability to spot talent. And it wasn't just in the artist. Of course, he had Otis Redding, and then lightning struck twice again with Duane Allman. But it was also in the what we've discovered with Rock Candy Tours and the music executives that he brought along, finding Frank Finner and sweet-talking him to come from the U.K. to Macon, Georgia, finding a guy who had an idea for an art concept on a T-shirt and basically started the music merchandise industry. Uncle Phil really did know how to spot him, and it really was his love for music that just kind of absorbed all these people and just created this music mecca in Macon.
Okay, so Jamie, tell us about another musician who maybe doesn't have the headlines that, say, Duane Allman or Greg Allman or Otis Redding had.
Well, one that seems to be coming popular again is a gentleman named Emmett Miller. And Emmett was born in Macon and was best known basically as a minstrel singer, which is sort of a connection between some of the vaudeville days and country music. And Emmett Miller, particularly his version of Lovesick Blues, was a tremendous inspiration to Hank Williams and Merle Haggard. And he seems to be receiving some recognition again now, sort of being remembered for his contribution to American music.
Well, let's take a listen. This is Lovesick Blues as recorded by Emmett Miller in 1928.
With a beautiful gal, but she don't care about me. To make her love me, I tried. Lord, I was sad and I cried, but she just refused.
So now let's listen to Hank Williams' rendition of that same song.
I got a feeling of the blues, oh Lord, since my baby said goodbye.
Jessica, how did your family and others attract so many musicians to Macon, even those who were not born there?
That's another thing that, you know, every time we give a tour, we even have to step back and ask ourselves, what was it about Macon, Georgia? But I really do believe it was Phil's love for this town. He could have been anywhere. He could have been in Los Angeles. He could have been in the other M's, Muscle Shoals and Memphis. But he really did plant a flag in Macon. And, you know, there was this sleepy southern town that just seemed to inspire this great bit of creativity. People ask me all the time, you know, what is your favorite part of all this? And my favorite stories are the ones that involved rhythm and blues because, I mean, they were doing great things together in the backdrop where black and white people weren't allowed to be together in public spaces, especially in the South. And they really had a fearless ability to still create, and that was their way of changing the social fabric, was through writing songs and recording together and bringing instruments together and then ultimately making people dance together. The Reddings and the Waldens, we are family to this day, and my dad and Otis bought properties adjacent to each other so they could be out in the country and ride horses and fish together. And, you know, that sense of kinship is just, it's lasted through time and tragedy.
So, Jamie, by the time we get to the 1980s, the music scene in Macon kind of fades out. What happened?
The new wave movement. Which is interesting because a lot of the new wave acts were booked by a subsidiary of Capricorn Records called Paragon Booking Agency. So a lot of the bands that you're familiar with, the Go-Go's, the Bangles, Debbie Harry, Iggy Pop, they were actually being booked out of Macon, Georgia. But Phil and Frank Finner of Capricorn Records just didn't really see much of a future in that. And Mike Mills and Bill Berry were not born in Macon, but these are half of the band REM. And together, they kind of were trying to create a punk scene with Ian Copeland, who was a booking agent. And around 1979, the B-52s started finding success in Athens. And it was Mike Mills and Bill decided it was time to give another city a shot. And basically from 1979 to about 1982, that's when most of the infrastructure, the executive infrastructure of Macon began to leave. And that's basically when Athens started becoming Athens and Macon started becoming Macon. I would like to point out, though, that REM had a lot of help from Ian Copeland, who, of course, was from Macon, Georgia. And then Widespread Panic was founded by Philip Walden Jr., Phil's son. So while Athens' two most successful early bands were having success, they were still being helped out tremendously by Macon. So I'm going to tell Athens they owe us a debt of gratitude.
Well, I think they hear you at this point. But Jessica, before we go, what about the structures? We've heard a lot about some of the endangered historical structures in Macon. Are they going to be preserved?
Yes, this is an exciting time in Macon, Georgia. We really began this tour company to tell the story of these places that we did feel like were endangered. The Capricorn Studio was listed by the Georgia Trust as one of the top 10 places in peril in 2010. And it was announced that the Capricorn Studio is going to be brought back to life. I think a lot of our future in Macon is going to stand well on the shadows of this legendary past and hopefully inspire some new talent along the way.
That's Jessica Walden and Jamie Weatherford. They run Rock Candy Tours in Macon. Celeste spoke with them in February as part of our year-long series, The Year of Georgia Music.
Doggone it.